Welcome to the Ipsos Politics and Society podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley, and you'll notice that we're doing things a little bit differently this week. We're on video, live in HD or thereabouts. So hopefully that's something that you enjoy. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking about Boris Johnson's legacy. We've just issued our final political monitor of Johnson's premiership. Of course, he's still got 6 weeks or so left-ish until he actually stands down. We're going to be looking at what the public think of the job he's done as Prime Minister and also some of the policy areas and where he's seen as doing a good or bad job. And of course, looking ahead, because general elections are not just about the government and the Conservative Party in power, they're also about the opposition too. We're going to be looking at what some of the numbers say about the prospect of a Labour government in the future and what people think about Keir Starmer and the Labour Party. And before we get going, I should say that if you do like what you hear, please do share us on social media or hit that like and subscribe button on YouTube and elsewhere, and also subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. But without further ado, let me introduce my colleague, Cameron Garrett. Cameron, welcome. This is fun, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you, Kieran. I wish I'd have ironed my shirt this morning.
At least you've got some politically neutral colours going on at the moment, yeah. So that's what we like to see at Ipsos. Yeah,
bold blue from you, Kieran.
That is, by no means, well, we'll move on swiftly from that one. I'm not sure how to respond there. But so we had our new political monitor out. Obviously, people that follow this will know voting attention, leader satisfaction ratings, lots of topical questions as well. Where should we start? What do you think's the...
Let's start with voting intention. That's what people are interested in, right?
That's what people are interested in. So our poll numbers at the moment have Labour with a 14-point lead. So that's up from 11 points in June. So the Labour Party on, let's get this right, 44%, Conservatives are on 30, and then the Lib Dems on 10 and the Greens on 8. So very chunky lead for the Labour Party. So it looks like it's going pretty well for them at the moment. But what do you make of some of that?
Yeah, but 14-point Labour lead, you wouldn't be complaining if you're the Labour Party, would you? But how does that compare to other pollsters?
So this is something that's been doing the rounds on social media where you can often find me in the last sort of week or so. I mean, essentially, we are at the top end of the Labour lead. There are other pollsters that have Labour double digits ahead, but there are also other pollsters that have the race much, much closer. In some cases, a point or two between the two main parties. So there is quite, it's fair to say, there is quite a divergence between the polls. And I think what I always try and say, not to be a cop-out, we can go into some of the detail behind that, is that when it comes to it, you do want to pay attention, not just to voting intention at this stage, but also some of the underlying numbers, because voting intention mid-parliament can bounce around a bit, depending on methodologies. It can change quite sharply. We need to bear that in mind. I think some of the reasons for that would be to do with methodological considerations about what people do with people that say don't know in their polls, how they screen for turnouts, and these sorts of things. And different pollsters have different methodologies. I wouldn't say that's the whole reason for some of these differences, but I think when you've got, for example, at the moment, around one in four Conservative voters from 2019, at least initially telling us they're undecided before we try and squeeze them a bit. If that's roughly the case where people start from, then if different pollsters treat those people differently, that can create divergence in the polls.
So what do you reckon that means for Labour going to the next election? Is this a soft Labour lead that we're seeing?
Certainly the 14-point lead we've got, I feel there is evidence that it's soft. As I've mentioned, I mean, we have one in four Conservative voters from 2019 saying that they're undecided, pre-squeeze. Now, what that means is when the very first moment we say, how will you vote at the next election, about one in four 2019 Tories told us this month they didn't know. Now, we ask a squeeze question which says, okay, who are you most inclined to support? Try and get people off the fence, because we know that at least historically, quite a lot of people that are undecided end up going back to where they voted last time. So we don't want to take their word for that alone. But even then, you still end up being left with, I can't remember the exact figure, but I think it's around 8% once you squeeze people of 2019 Tories undecided, which is considerably more than 2019 Labour voters. So that's one angle to it. The other angle is turnout. So we have 2019 Conservatives considerably less likely to say they're certain to vote than Labour voters. So when you add those two things together, you do get, I think, an element of this lead that is soft. Having said that, I don't think it's right to say for the Conservatives, well, it's okay, when we have a new Prime Minister, all those wavering Conservatives will come back, or they'll jump off the fence and jump in our direction. Frankly, that wouldn't necessarily be enough, given some of the Conservative voters that are switching to Labour. So they're going to have to do more than that. So I think what I would say, if I'm looking at the voting intention at the moment, as we always say, look at it in the rounds, don't just look at one. You know, the phrase, it's just one poll, remains true. Probably assume that there's going to be a boost when there's a new Prime Minister, but then recognise that even if the polls were neck and neck, that puts the Conservatives still in a difficult position next time. So I think that it's going to be about delivery. It's going to be about what happens in the next couple of years, we assume, to the next general election. And I think fundamentally, we shouldn't, whether the Tories are 14 behind or 2 or 3 behind, they're in a difficult spot.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting when they have a new leader in this honeymoon period and whether the Conservative Party are going to be able to reinvent themselves yet again. But thinking back on the leader they currently have as he's leaving office, he said this week that he's defied the saying that all political careers end in failure. What do the numbers say on that? Do you agree?
I didn't see that, actually. That's interesting. I'm not sure being removed by your own party a couple of years into winning a majority of like 80-odd is anything else. But one of the things we've done this month on our political monitors, we've looked at whether people think that Boris Johnson's government did a good or bad job in a number of different areas. The first thing to say is that there are some notable successes. And like that is when Boris Johnson's defenders say that, there is truth to it. That isn't just spin. So, for example, 8 in 10 of the British public say that the government did a good job handling the COVID vaccine rollout. And, you know, we've talked about this before, haven't we? Like, if you walk down the street and 8 out of 10 people agree on something that the government's done and agree it was positive, that's really unusual. Yeah. So I think that is obviously a major success of Johnson's government. Yeah. People can debate how much he was responsible for that. But look, you can do that with the negatives as well, right? So this is his government. It's seen as doing well on that. Similarly, on dealing with COVID itself, 54% say good job, 42% say his government did a bad job. Much more split, but still net positive. Russia's invasion of Ukraine, 57% think his government did a good job responding to that. 28% say bad job. So there are notable successes. And I suppose this idea that Johnson's government got the big calls right, I suppose if you think those are the big calls, the public agree to some extent. Having said that, there are a host of issues where Johnson's government is seen as doing a bad job. And some of those issues are the ones that are the most important to the public right now. Mm-hmm. So everybody knows that cost of living is the number one issue on people's minds for obvious reasons. I think people have seen what the Bank of England's come up with yesterday in terms of projections. You know, forget politics for a moment and elections, for everybody, like, it's really, really worrying. On that, 75% of the public think that the government's done a bad job dealing with the cost of living. So, and that's the number one issue facing the country at the moment. So you can start to get a feeling for why people aren't quite happy with how the government are doing. But I won't go through every issue, but there are other major issues where around 7 in 10 and two thirds think the government have done a bad job. Managing immigration, 71% bad job. Improving the NHS, 70% bad job. Tax and public expenditure, 66% bad job. The economy, 63% bad job. So, like, again, we've got like a list of 14 issues on there or something about that nature in this poll. So I think that on the one hand, while Boris Johnson's government had their successes, I think for Truss and Sunak coming in, whoever it is, where they'll be concerned is the fact that, you know, voters tell us that cost of living and public services are really important to them. And those, particularly the NHS and cost of living, the inheritance isn't good, to put it that way. It doesn't mean that the new Prime Minister will do a bad job in those areas, but that's what they're inheriting.
Yep. I think it's interesting, the stuff that the public think he did a good job on is kind of the unplanned stuff, the stuff that happened which you couldn't expect, like COVID, Ukraine, whereas the stuff he's lacking on is kind of the bread and butter policy stuff, which you'd thought they could plan out, NHS, the economy, etc.
And by unplanned, not the government's fault as well.
Yeah, you know, definitely. Yeah.
You know, they didn't cause the pandemic or the Russian invasion, right? So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's right.
But yeah, I agree with you. You definitely can't underestimate the public concern about the cost in living. 9 in 10 have told us they are. So to go back to talking to people in the street, that's 9 people saying yes, they are. 3 in 4 are concerned about their ability to pay their bills. 1 in 4 already using their savings to get by. And winter is coming. So yeah, people who are aspiring to become the next prime minister are going to be hit with the brutal reality that it's a hard job and people are going to want answers. But the new prime minister is also going to be thinking about how to win over that Tory coalition that Boris Johnson did get in 2019. What kind of policy areas do they need to be focusing on there to keep them on board?
Well, I think a lot of them are the same. But that's the first thing. You know, cost of living is just so all-encompassing, I think, to people at the moment. And people will probably get bored of us saying this on media interviews and podcasts like this. But it's because it's true. I mean, like, and the cost of living encompasses so many different aspects. Like, energy bills are obviously part of that, a large part of that, and what's driving things at the moment. But you know, as interest rates go up, mortgages and things of that nature will be important to pay. So in a way, cost of living is a bit like talking about the economy. It encompasses so much. And so, you know, we've been doing polling on strikes recently, for example, and those are primarily around pay, whereas that's a different issue to energy bills and maybe to interest rates, but they're all part of the same thing. But at the same time, the one thing I do keep banging on about is that the 2019 Conservative vote does have a disproportionate interest in borders and security and immigration and so on and so forth. And what was interesting to me is when you look at what the government's record amongst Conservative voters from 2019, the one area where a majority of 2019 Conservative voters think that the government's done a bad job on is borders and immigration. And so I think what you can learn from that is two things. One is that that group of voters, that coalition that Boris Johnson assembled in 2019, and to a lesser extent May before that, care about this stuff. And also, they don't think it's been going well. And so I would confidently predict that a key plank of the next prime minister's agenda going into the next election, but I suspect at the next election, is going to be around this topic. Whether they can turn around perceptions on that issue, I have no idea. I mean, it looks like it would be very, very difficult. But I can definitely see, given the importance of that issue to Conservative 2019 voters, I can definitely see the Conservatives going to the next election trying to put Labour on the back foot on that issue. Because one of the things we've seen in historic polling is even if those groups don't particularly care for the Tories' record on that, they don't have confidence in Labour on it either, which is a bit different to things like the cost of living in the NHS.
What about the issue that's kind of consumed the Tory leadership race on taxation? Where are they standing there?
So that's an interesting one. I mean, I think if you can condense the issue, it's about tax cuts now versus tax cuts later. I don't know that necessarily the public opinion on this is very predictive of where this debate goes, because I strongly suspect that the idea of tax cuts soon will probably be quite popular because people are struggling with the cost of living. However, people do also want their public services funded. They want to be reassured about that. And I'm not suggesting that anyone is saying that they won't be, but like that they are concerned about that. But it's all very well having tax cuts now if they genuinely do make things worse, like Rishi Sunak is saying would be the case. Then you might find that if Liz Truss gets in, she gets a honeymoon bounce, people like the tax cuts and so on. But if 6 months later we're worse off, that honeymoon period evaporates pretty quickly. So I don't know anything about, I'm not sure if polling right now is like predictive of where that debate goes. It really is a question of delivery. And this is the thing I keep coming back to on the next government. Conservatives have been in power a little while now. We've often talked about who's the most electable one. Is it Sunak? Is it Truss? No smoking guns in the data, I don't think. Really, it's going to come down to whether they can actually improve in some of these areas I've mentioned, like the NHS, cost of living and so on. Because if they can't, it's going to be a really difficult election next time. But on that election next time, I have some questions for you. So, because as I alluded to in the introduction, clearly a general election is about choice. We sometimes are a bit guilty of assuming that there's two choices. There's much more than that, particularly in Scotland, but also elsewhere. Like, there's other political parties too. I'm not going to name them for fear of missing someone out. But clearly the principal opposition is the Labour Party. They're the most likely alternative government one way or another. What do people think about Labour at the moment? Because like we've talked about them being ahead in the polls, debatable how far. Can they just sort of sit back and prepare for government?
So when you're thinking about the Labour Party themselves and going back to where they were after the 2019 general election, public perceptions have softened, but that's not saying much. So in our favourability tracker, how favourable are you to the parties? Labour are now on minus 12 and the Conservatives are on minus 30. The days after the general election, those numbers were reversed. Conservatives were on minus 11, Labour minus 27. So you can see how the last few months have damaged the Conservative brand. But let's not get ahead of ourselves by saying the Labour numbers are brilliant and they should be preparing for government tomorrow. We're still talking about minus figures. And when we ask the public if they think Labour are ready for government, we see around two-fifths apiece either agreeing or disagreeing. That is the best they've done since 2010 when they first went into opposition. But it's behind the majorities that Cameron and Blair were getting when they were in opposition.
So let's unpick that a little bit for someone that's listening, or even the viewers won't have the charts in front of them. So when you say that's better than what's gone before, put some numbers behind that.
Yep. So 37% are now agreeing that they are ready for government. The closest they've got to that is Ed Miliband in 2014 was on 35. Jeremy Corbyn got to 32. But there were some low points. So under Ed Miliband, it came down to 23 at some points. But it's also...
But what about disagreement? Yeah. Because like you mentioned earlier, that hostility towards Labour has reduced in their favourability numbers. Do you see that with the are they ready for government point?
Yeah, definitely. So under Ed Miliband and Jeremy Corbyn, there were always majorities disagreeing that they were ready for government. And that has softened now. So 43% disagree. So the hostility's down, but the public aren't necessarily won over by them.
And I suppose when you look at David Cameron and Tony Blair, they were, as you said, they were getting much higher levels of agreement. But small sample size, I suppose, particularly in the case of Blair, I sometimes think Blair was a very unique set of circumstances. Some of his numbers just are eye-wateringly high at that point. It's easy to forget how popular he was, partly because it was a long time ago that he was actually that popular. Okay, so jury out, do we think, on Labour? Is that a fair characterisation?
Yeah, and definitely for Starmer too. So Starmer's faced the accusation in recent months of being a bit boring. And whether that's true or not, his numbers are fairly tepid. So he has a net satisfaction rating in this latest political monitor of minus 20, half satisfied, 3 in 10 not. And there's not been much movement throughout the year, so he's not necessarily moving the dial. When you work out the average score for a leader of the opposition, it's minus 12 over 40 years of polling. So he's slightly behind the average. And at this stage in their leadership, Blair was on plus 21, as you say. Like, yeah, you forget, way out in front. Cameron on plus 4. But it's worth remembering government satisfaction at the minute, minus 54. So whilst Starmer's not doing great, his kind of best asset at the minute is, but everyone hates the government.
The government's pretty popular.
And yeah, maybe he doesn't have to inspire in as long, but it's not necessarily a great place to be, especially with a new leader coming in who might be able to revive those numbers. On who's going to make a better PM, he's level with Sunak, and Truss is only 6 points behind compared to a 20-point lead he currently has over Boris Johnson.
And what do you think about this idea that, you know, Labour needs to set its stall out? You know, Labour needs to come up with some policies and have a vision and that sort of thing? Because I guess if they're ahead, I think it was Polly Toynbee might have written a piece this week about saying, well, almost paraphrasing, almost Starmer might bore us to power or something, or his caution. I think he's very cautious, but that might be enough. That might deliver office. I mean, what do we have any numbers on that that sort of give any indications to what the public think?
So half currently say they don't know what Keir Starmer stands for, compared to a third saying they do. So the argument for Labour here, I guess, is that when you get closer to a general election, they'll start putting out ideas. You'll get a clearer idea of what Keir Starmer stands for, and they don't want to put out policies. They'll be nabbed by those crafty Tories, the popular ones. But I guess the risk is they're not setting the agenda. They're not inspiring people. When there's disarray in government, they're not able to say something, really. But it's kind of reflective of Keir Starmer's leadership, I would think. It's kind of cautious and planned out. First step, get our numbers up, get the public to look at us again. Second step, get some policy agendas out, get people to know the team, etc.
I suppose knowing what you stand for isn't very good if they don't like what you stand for, is it, as well? So I suppose they have to be the right policies too. Because, I mean, you might find that there are people saying they'll vote Labour at the moment, partly because they don't know what Keir Starmer's going to do. And when he does say, they might not like it. But still, that's not saying they can't. They won't have to have policies eventually. Clearly they will. But I guess there are pros and cons. There are pros and cons in either approach. I mean, what do you, let's sort of finish on Labour. What do you then see as the positives and negatives of their situation? Because I suppose you said lukewarm poll ratings, but obviously the government unpopular. What about the issues? Are there issues that Labour are stronger and weaker on?
So I think if you've listened to Keir Starmer or anyone from the Labour Party in recent weeks in interviews, they keep banging on about the economy and they want to fight the next election on the economy. And I think that's probably set against the cost of living crisis that we're in. They think this is something that they can maybe edge forward on. This is interesting because it's not usually ground that's fertile for the Labour Party. The Tories have been hammering them on this for the past decade. The last Labour government left us with no money, etc. And they are starting to draw level. So on the cost of living, they're ahead because of that's where we would typically see them on something like that. But on taxation, they're starting to draw level. Still not a lead in, but level, which is big where they've been at over the past decade. On the economy itself, they're now 6 points behind, which that figure's been in double digits for a long time now. I guess the risk is they're focusing so much on this at the minute. They do need to look at some of their mainstay bread and butter Labour policies, such as public services, the NHS. But maybe they feel quite safe on them. I don't know. What do you think?
It's funny, like, I have some sympathy with the idea that Labour will always be ahead on the NHS and it will campaign on the NHS and then it will lose a general election. Until now, though, I almost feel like at the moment there is quite a significant public concern about waiting times and being able to see a GP when you want to. And I think we've had some Ipsos polling out recently that showed, I think it was around more than 7 in 10 thought that the current waiting list times for emergency care were sort of at unacceptable levels. So it does sort of seem a little bit strange, not that Labour aren't talking about it, but they don't seem to be making it the central part of their mission at the moment, as you've alluded to. It's sort of a bit strange that they're missing that open goal politically and also just sort of speaking to the concern people have. So I think you're right. It's a delicate balancing act between trying to look new and different and ready for government. And we've already seen that there's division there still. Versus remembering what your core bread and butter issues are. I mean, it's quite easy to imagine Labour fighting a general election campaign on hospitals and the cost of living. You know, I mentioned earlier how I think that the Conservatives will try and make immigration and borders a part of the next election too. Cost of living is going to be a fight that, at least on the current numbers, both parties are going to have to fight. Tories might not want to fight on the NHS particularly, just for historic reasons. They don't poll as well on it. So there is the germ of an election campaign that you could see being fought on territory that's quite favourable towards Labour. But fundamentally, I do think that when it comes to a general election, there'll be an awful lot more scrutiny on the prospect of Keir Starmer as Prime Minister. And whilst his unfavourables are nowhere near as high as Jeremy Corbyn once had, that's not a particularly useful comparison because Jeremy Corbyn lost, right? So I do think it's going to be having... He'll need to make sure he's not on the back foot quickly in a general election because that could easily happen. But anyway, that's all we've got. Thank you for joining me, Cameron, today. That's all we've got time for this video episode. Better make sure I look at the camera. This video episode of the Ipsos Politics and Society podcast. Thank you very much for watching and listening if you decided to listen to our audio version. If you like what you hear, please do hit the like button and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll have some more episodes coming in the next few weeks as the next Prime Minister is announced.